But first, an exclusive investigation into a phenomenon that's called rent farming and is seeing women caught in the crossfire. There are claims that a rising number of unscrupulous rogue landlords are gaming the system and making money out of vulnerable women who've fled domestic violence and others who are also in crisis. It's believed that tens of millions of taxpayers' money is being wrongfully claimed as some landlords fail to provide services to women who desperately need help. Today, in a special report that's taken a year to compile, we reveal how these women are being exploited a second time around in what's officially called exempt accommodation, which we'll explain shortly. But what I wanted to explain was that it's extremely rare to be able to hear from one of these women who's found themselves trapped in such schemes. Of course, grateful for a roof over their heads, but without the key support system that the landlord is being paid by the government via the council to provide. Listen to a bit of what happened to this woman, Charlotte.
In one weekend, I was both sexually assaulted and I was stolen from. It's only now I look back and I think I wasn't capable of declining that accommodation, of advocating that it wasn't appropriate for me to be in a mixed sex environment with no staff. I wasn't able to advocate what happened to me that one weekend, and that's just one weekend. It was beyond abhorrent. And what I would say needs to change is that what looks good on paper is not being translated into real life. How can a woman whose life has got to the point where she needs to be in exempt accommodation, you know, it's not gone great for whatever reason, how can I be expected to live with a population of people who are allowed to be 20% sex offenders, male sex offenders, mixed at all? It's noisy. It is chaotic. People fight. You don't know if they're shouting to be heard or shouting because they're arguing. And if you've come from an environment where everything makes you jump, you know, you're a wreck. I've often said, if I wasn't a wreck before I went in, I absolutely was when I came out. I've recovered in spite of going in there.
Charlotte there, who we'll hear more from in a moment. But today we can reveal that more than 40 leading organisations have sent a letter shared exclusively with Women's Hour to two secretaries of state, warning them that this type of housing has become a gold rush for some rogue landlords who use legal loopholes to exploit and profiteer. I'll also be talking to the Domestic Abuse Commissioner for England and Wales, who's with me in the studio. But first, let's speak now to our reporter, Carolyn Atkinson, who's put this story together. Carolyn, I think we need to start with what exactly exempt accommodation is.
Yeah, well, exempt accommodation is called that because landlords are exempt from the normal housing benefit rules and they can get much more money, perhaps double or even triple the amount of rent per room for each person living in, say, their flat, their hostel or a house of multiple occupation. Now, the reason why they're able to claim this higher or enhanced housing benefit for the people who are living there is because they're meant to spend that extra money on wraparound care and support to get someone out of crisis and back on track. Now, the homelessness charity Crisis has found that more than 150,000 households around the UK are living in this exempt accommodation. They're often people recovering from drug or alcohol addiction. They could be care leavers. They could be people just coming out of prison or asylum seekers. And as our investigation reveals, thousands of women who are escaping domestic abuse. Now, I should say that exempt accommodation, when it works well, can be fantastic and it can be life-changing. But what we're talking about here is a rise and a spread of exempt accommodation set up purely to make money. Now, providers get that extra housing benefit, but they don't provide good professional wraparound care or support, which for people who survived domestic abuse is, of course, crucial. And at the moment, the problem is there's very little that councils can do if a provider decides to actually set up on their patch.
And thank you for explaining that, because you've also got sight of this letter now shared exclusively with Women's Hour by a group of leading organisations and the social justice charity Commonwealth Housing to say what?
Well, it says exempt accommodation is in crisis. So Commonwealth Housing and more than 40 other organisations, including the Local Government Association, Women's Aid and the homelessness charity Crisis, they've written to two secretaries of state, not one, Michael Gove at the Department of Levelling Up Housing and Communities and Therese Coffey at the Department for Work and Pensions. They're warning them that regulation is poor, that unscrupulous landlords are financially gaming the system and they're using loopholes to claim this enhanced housing benefit. And in fact, they say it's fallen victim to exploitation, to corruption and to blatant profiteering. Now, Commonweal Housing is leading a campaign for reform. It wants to a top-to-bottom review, and its chief exec, Ashley Horsey, has told Woman's Hour that profit is being put above people, people like Charlotte, who we just heard from. Now, in order to see what this is all like on the ground, I've been to the northeast of England, where there is a lot of exempt accommodation. I met a woman called Marnie Burden. She has more than two decades' experience in the housing and the homelessness sector, and she works for a charity called Expert Link.
I thought I would just show you some of these types of accommodation in the northeast. I mean, the one that was stood outside at the moment, they do claim exempt accommodation, and originally it was supposed to be for women fleeing domestic abuse. That was how it was described to the local authority. Then it wasn't. It was mixed, so it had men and women. There was lots of issues around safeguarding as well and women being sexually exploited. And now it's currently all men. But the same organisation has opened up a one particularly for females. So I'll take you around and show you that one as well. But there's just quite a lot of them in the northeast. I know it is the same across the country.
And so when an organisation decides they're going to open a refuge, mm-hmm. they're going to support women who've survived domestic violence yeah. and domestic abuse, mm-hmm. surely that's a great idea. That's what is needed, because there is a shortage of refuge spaces.
Yeah, it is, but these exempt accommodations don't provide support. So a person will get 1 hour of support a week. And I mean, we've seen examples or heard examples where, you know, they'll say the CCTV is part of the support that they get. But these are only manned Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. You know, like if a woman is in crisis, you know, where does she need? She needs staff on site to provide, you know, really good support.
But there are also exempt accommodation providers who do provide full refuge support. And to get rid of all of them surely would be overreacting.
I'm not saying that they're all bad, you know, because there are some good examples. But yeah, I just think there needs to be more legislation around it just to stop unscrupulous landlords just coming into an area and making money out of vulnerable people.
And how much money are they making?
Well, it depends on an area, because the exempt accommodation rate is different, you know, so it's each local authority or a housing benefit department would decide how much people get, but they could get anything from, you know, like £150 to, you know, £300 a week per person.
How does that compare with normal housing benefit?
Well, some areas, say for example, I mean, like one that I know, if they're over 35, they'd get like £90 a week.
And then if an organisation was claiming the exempt housing benefit, that would be getting on for double?
Yeah, definitely.
So, in the car now, where are we off to?
I'm going to take you to the other side of the city, where there's an accommodation that has just been developed, and it's supposed to be for women.
Women fleeing domestic abuse?
Women fleeing domestic abuse, yes.
Okay, we're turning left.
So as you can see, I mean, this is it is a lovely building, but it's the support that these women will be given, you know. So although this one's in a nicer area, it's still what support will they be getting from this organisation.
A lot of these providers would say, well, they're providing a service that's really, really needed.
Well, I don't agree with that, because we've seen so many examples of people who've been evicted from these type of accommodations and the horror stories that they tell. They're not safeguarding these people. They're not giving them support. They're not giving them wraparound support. You know, they don't have to adhere to any rules or regulations. You know, when you're commissioning a service, you know, you're looking at the support, and the support's really important, and they're monitored on that as well. You know, so commissioners would check up on those accommodations, they go and visit them, they talk to the people, they talk to the staff, you know, so you get an idea what accommodation is like, but these aren't. And I do think the motivation behind it is it's money, you know, it's you've got investment companies, you know, that are buying up these properties, you know, and it's just to get that higher level of rent. You know, and a lot of women would go into this type of accommodation thinking that they're going to get the support that they need and finally somebody can help them, and then they'll get in there and then realise that they're being let down again.
Marine Burden there from Expert Link. Well, Carolyn, what are the rules that they should be following?
Well, two key things really. The provider must be not for profit, and it must provide, and I quote, more than minimal care, support or supervision. But there's no way of checking up on this. So the rogue landlords keep on milking that cash cow. And one recent estimate is that the exempt accommodation sector has received £1 billion in housing benefit payments from the DWP via councils and more than £800 million in the last financial year alone. Much will be well spent, but some isn't. So let's hear more from Charlotte. It's certainly been really difficult finding women willing to talk about this whole area. Some are too traumatised and speaking again would re-traumatise them. One woman I was speaking to, oh, I was hoping to speak to actually, she'd left the accommodation, she'd gone back to her perpetrator, we imagine, because the conditions were so tricky that she was living in. Others fear it could adversely affect any support they do get or the accommodation that they're in. But Charlotte has waived her right to anonymity because she wanted to talk to Woman Zhao about a system that she is so worried about. She told me it's meant to offer support to people like her who've survived various experiences, including domestic abuse, but she says it ends up exploiting them a second time.
I went to exempt accommodation after my life just spiraled out of control. You know, it had been running at walls for years with, you know, mental health, drinking, bulimia, my relationships with other people were just, you know, I was on a collision course with them all the time. I could get a job, but I couldn't keep a job. I did not know what was wrong with me. And neither did anyone else, frankly. I wasn't very good at doing life. So my tendency was I needed someone. And I was always quite attracted to men that would take control of the situation and that I could feel like I could rely on, choosing people on purpose that will let me drink the way I need to drink to feel better, will give me loads of attention so I don't have to sit with myself, you know, that are jealous and possessive, actually, really dysfunctional relationships. And being hospitalised was a normal thing. You'd be hospitalised by your boyfriend and you get back together. That's not something that I would accept now. But at the time, I wasn't very well. That even when you leave a relationship that was like that, you just very quickly end up in another because your expectations and your boundaries are so wide that it's happened before. And it's only now that I see how unacceptable some things were. I had nowhere to go. And I spent some time sofa surfing, living with people that had, you know, really been quite profoundly abusive. You know, I was stalked. I was rang 30 odd times a night. I was asked to get into a car and told I wouldn't be going home. Really quite horrible things, but because it happens over time, slowly, slowly, well, it's not as bad as the time when somebody put you in a neck brace, and it's only when you look back and go, oh, that was really very bad, and I became homeless.
Do you think people know what exempt accommodation is?
No, I didn't know what it was either, even after I'd been in it. I was hearing conversations about exempt accommodation. I thought, oh, those kind of issues sound like what I dealt with when I was in supported accommodation, which is what I thought I'd been in. And I joked to myself that it was called supported accommodation because it was very unsupported. So when I realised we were kind of talking about the same thing, I thought, this has all happened to me. I've got something to say.
What did they promise would be offered to you to support you? And what did it turn out to be in reality?
They just said to me that I would be given somewhere of my own to sleep, so not somebody else's sofa. And I was put in with a man. I was in one bedroom, a bedroom with a locked door, and I was told that that would be sufficient, but it was dangerous. Someone had put a sofa up at the back of the doors in the living room because it was a known drug house. People had tried to burst in the back door, so there was a sofa. And I honestly thought I would rather be on any of my ex-boyfriend's sofas, because I'm not safe here either. I did end up leaving after the assault. I went to stay with an ex-boyfriend. Why would I not? Because it's better the devil you know. And I said, I'm not coming back unless I can be where there's some staff. Exempt accommodation I went to first was not staffed. It was part of a conglomerate of properties that was owned by a provider that on paper it was ticking boxes. So I never met a proper manager. I only ever met people that were on really, really low wages, and often they probably did go above and beyond what they were expected to do, but they just weren't required to do very much. It supported. I will be in the office and you will present for a breathalyzer and I will document it. But that's not support, that's administration. You know, what is support? Is it having a chat with me for 10 minutes?
The rule says more than minimal support. That's the guidance.
And I think that's too subjective. I would say that getting 2 toilet rolls a week and a washing tablet is not enough. What I need is support. And I don't believe that 2 toilet rolls and a washing tablet cost £230 a week. The fact you can put a wash on is the least of your worries. You know, what has happened to make you get here? This is not a hotel. One example for me, which really stood out, was there was a member of staff there. So on paper, it looks like there was support on site. However, this gentleman wasn't used to dealing with issues that were living in the house, you know, and that's our home. There was a chap and he stabbed himself, and it came down to the members of the house. So people that are either in active addiction, people that are trying to be sober, people that have come from abusive lives, sex workers, people that have had some real traumatic experiences are then the ones that have to deal with this chap. And at one point I just turned and I faced the wall, because it was almost like information overload. My story is one of hundreds and thousands. And what I mostly want to convey is that the details of mine are kind of irrelevant. The point is that massive amounts of money are being spent on something that is not existing at best, and actually at worst is damaging. So I don't think the people that are releasing £230 a week into the pockets of anything would feel like they're getting any value for money for knowing that someone gets sexually assaulted for 2 toilet rolls and a washing tablet.
Well, since she left the exempt accommodation a year ago, the good news is Charlotte says she's now living a wonderful life, and she's using her experiences to pursue a career which confronts policymakers and also works with women who are going through what she went through.
Well, talking about policy, it's important to understand the government's position on this, and I know you're going to outline that because it has been talked about and is being talked about. But I should say at this point, we did invite ministers onto the programme, didn't we?
We did. We asked whether Michael Gove would take part in this programme. But certainly the government is aware of concerns raised by people like Charlotte and the people who've written that letter headed off by Commonweal Housing. A recent Westminster Hall debate in the Houses of Parliament heard claims about exempt accommodation, claims of fake contracts and forged signatures, of whole streets being bought up and turned into this type of housing. That sucks up family homes and it also prices out regular tenants. And there were even allegations that there are links to organised crime. The debate was led by Birmingham Ladywood Labour MP Shabana Mahmood, who said in her constituency alone 1,600 households live in exempt accommodation, and she says it's not unusual for vulnerable women to be housed alongside dangerous men in properties with no safeguarding.
I have seen providers say that installing CCTV in communal areas counts as supervision, or having a manager who might visit the property once in a blue moon counts as adequate supervision of vulnerable people. Certainly, that sort of so-called supervision would pass the more than minimal test, but the idea that this is what was meant by the regulations that determine access to larger pots of housing benefit is utterly outrageous in my view. So cowboy operators know that they can access more money per tenant. They don't have to spend very much or indeed anything at all to demonstrate that they're providing care, support or supervision. So what is the upshot? Lots of cash available if you know how to game the system.
And fellow Birmingham MP Jess Phillips, who's the Shadow Minister for Domestic Violence and Safeguarding, claimed that one of her constituents, a 19-year-old woman who'd been raped, is currently living alongside convicted rapists in her exempt accommodation while she waits for her case to go to court. And Jess Phillips says some women have been killed in this type of housing.
We have had 2 women in the last 3 years murdered in exempt supported accommodation, their key workers not noticing that one of them was murdered, and thought when she went to visit the property, the person, she said, oh, she's absolutely fine, to the woman who'd been murdered's mother, and it was the person who had murdered her she'd seen. That's the level of support that vulnerable women are getting in this accommodation. It is dangerous and it must stop.
Jess Phillips. Well, Birmingham is one of 5 cities where the government has been funding pilot schemes to try to work out how to get rid of these rogue landlords. The number of people living in exempt accommodation in Birmingham has doubled to 22,000 in just the last 3 years. But Birmingham is being seen by many as leading the way in how to end this crisis. And during the pilot, they've clawed back more than £3.5 million that had been wrongly paid to landlords and tenants in exempt accommodation. Now, the other cities taking part in the pilot schemes are Blackpool, Hull, Blackburn and Bristol, and the results of the pilots are expected fairly soon. Now, the final thing to say, Emma, is that the Select Committee for Levelling Up has announced it's going to investigate this whole controversial area of exempt accommodation, including survivors of domestic abuse who, as Charlotte put it, eventually recover, not because of it, but in spite of it.
Carolyn, thank you very much for that. And the Levelling Up Committee has received written evidence from organisations and will publish it in due course. Then it will hear from witnesses in person. But some organisations have already gone public and published their submissions outlining what they want to see change. And as I said, we did invite the ministers onto the programme, Michael Gove, they're named by Carolyn. We did not get a response to join us this morning, a positive response to join us this morning, but we did get this statement which said from the Department of Levelling Up, Housing and Community spokesperson, who said, we are providing councils with £125 million this year to deliver specialist support in safe accommodation for domestic abuse victims. They go on to say it is completely unacceptable for anyone to abuse the exempt accommodation system, which is why we've invested over £5 million to support some of the worst affected areas. We will continue to support councils to drive out rogue landlords. Well, listening to all of this is the Domestic Abuse Commissioner for England and Wales, Nicole Jacobs, who's with me in the studio. Good morning, Nicole. I should make clear at this point, you're not speaking on behalf of the government, but in your role, your independent role as the commissioner. What do you make of what you've just heard?
I mean, it's beyond troubling. I think Charlotte says it all, doesn't she? In thinking about victims of domestic abuse who by definition, if they're seeking this type of accommodation or are at very high risk, we know most homicides happen after the point of separation, most serious harm happens. This is the time when victims need care and support and really quality services. And so it really defies all logic that we could, you know, have this going on and know about it and not be doing something much more proactively. I've worked in
refuge. Did you know about it, if you don't mind me asking? Because, of course, a lot of people listening to this will have no idea that this is part of what can happen.
It is something that I've been aware of and I've been speaking to government about. And it is true that these pilots have been happening and there's learning from the pilots. But we're now at a point where, you know, government needs to make a decision. What proactively will they do? It's very clear what the problems are. It does boil down to a lack of regulation. It boils down to a lack of attention to what care and support and how that is defined. And also it's a disconnect between kind of what's laid out at the national level and then what is being done to support local areas to really get that implementation right. So people will be asking, well, why wouldn't local authorities be doing more? But to some degree, we've learned in these pilots, we don't know, again, all of what's been learned. That's a sense of urgency that we need to hear from government. But what can be, there are things that, if funded, local areas can look at what accommodation is being offered in their area and figure out how to really get the value for money, the quality and the enforcement right. But ultimately, I'm afraid it will come down to looking at the regulations and tightening those up. So we really need to see that happening now. It's a very urgent problem.
The exempt accommodation, if it can't be regulated, should it be removed?
Well, I think it can be regulated.
But I suppose it's just some, you know, would say it obviously can't be, or it's seemingly there's something broken here and people perhaps lack faith it will be fixed.
And one thing I want to clarify from this statement from government is the $125 million, which is obviously very welcome. It was part of the Domestic Abuse Act, which created a statutory duty for accommodation-based services for domestic abuse. We often, in shorthand, refer to that as refuge. That is commissioned services. Those are services that have oversight. So those you could put to one side. They're working on high standards. At the local level, commissioners have a lot of flexibility and ability to make sure that those types of services are running really well. And I've worked in those services myself. I can tell you it's horrific to reflect on what Charlotte has been through and what she could have had in some of those services. It's just such a tragedy. But what we're talking about is beyond, if you think of that parameter, the exempt accommodation. Some of those, as your reporter points out, Some of those are very good services. They might have been services that have grown up over many years, local refuges with incredible volunteers, incredible support. They just happen to not be commissioned at the local authority level, if that makes sense. So then they would be considered exempt accommodation. So within some of these rogue landlords and these cowboy landlords, there are good ones. So it's not as easy as saying, well, let's just get rid of all exempt accommodation. We have to see, you know, much more understanding of what good looks like, a definition of the care and support needs. And then we need to see government investing in allowing local authorities to be able to enforce that, because they don't invest in that now nearly as much as they should. And that's what we really need to see government taking decisions on.
What do you think will focus minds on this? Because, of course, as we pointed out as well, you know, millions of pounds worth of taxpayers' money is being potentially wasted, we know is being wasted through this right now, through these rogue landlords.
I mean, I think what simply focuses minds are the examples we've just heard, what Charlotte said, what, you know, some of the MPs have pointed out that they're picking up. I mean, the things that are going on within these taxpayer-paid housing accommodation defies all logic and all kind of morals. But I do think what may focus minds for ministers will be the Select Committee, this type of reporting, making sure that we understand that they've been investing. And I do know ministers care about this because I've talked to them about it. And they have invested in these pilots, but we now need decisions. We need to see a funding and a rollout from what's learned in the pilots, what's learned in some of these areas. And we need to see the tightening of the regulations.
Nicole Jacobs, Domestic Abuse Commissioner for England and Wales.